Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight on my own. Bruce is out doing some moon watching tonight, some kind of blood red wolf moon eclipse. Hope Bruce is having a better night than the Edmonton Oilers did. The Oilers, of course, lost 7-4 to the Carolina Hurricanes. And just another really, really mediocre game from the Oilers. I'm just checking the wild card standings right now to see the bad news. They're now 3 points out of a playoff spot. So somehow hanging in there, despite the fact that they are on a terrible run of play. They have been for some time now. This is the Two Good Things, Two Bad Things, and Two Numbers podcast. And since Bruce isn't here, and since I'm kind of fed up with the orders right now, we're just going to shave that down to one thing each for me. So the good news is that the Oilers actually have, of the players who play tonight, they actually have some relief fast skaters. And some players who can, they're either super fast going up and down the ice or super fast, agile. And, of course, in the modern NHL, speed is what it's all about, speed and skill. And the Oilers aren't completely bereft in this category. And so in the players who can really move it, I have McDavid, Nugent Hopkins, Nurse, Cassian, and Caleb Jones. Jones may not be as fast in a straight line, same as RNH, but they're both incredibly agile hockey players. And I find them all worthy of their spots on the Oilers roster. The bad thing, though, from tonight's game, and this is what really hit me, and this is what I'm actually getting at here, is just how many players on the Oilers just do not skate at an NHL level. They're not even average skaters. And I was it just hit me, just, you know, watching guys grinding up and down the ice tonight. How many players like that can you have on an NHL team and still compete and still win at least half your games? How many, what's the maximum number? Could you have half your roster below average skaters? I just don't think so. You know, you look at a team like the Calgary Flames coming to town, and it's, you'll be hard pressed to find more than one or two guys, I think, on the current roster who can't skate. But the Oilers roster is just full of players who are either not agile enough or not fast enough in a straight line. And tonight I have 8 players on that list. So I think not on that list are the 5 guys I mentioned before. Draisaitl, Puljujärvi, Russell, Yamamoto, and Reeder all have at least average NHL skating. I think Draisaitl, when he gets going, Puljujärvi, when he gets going, Yamamoto's agile, Russell's agile, and Reeder, when he's going in a straight line, is pretty fast. So there's something about their skating. I think when you look at, you know, the combination of straight ahead speed and agility on the other hand, that you could classify those players fairly as at least average NHL skaters. But they had 8 players in tonight's lineup, 8 players who were below average skaters in one way or another, and I think who was average out as below average skaters. And I know that the coach says that it's not a concern with Milan Lucic's skating. And when Lucic does get going in a straight line, he can skate, but his agility is among the lowest level in the NHL. Colby Cave and Kyle Brodziak are just really both slow skaters at center. Brandon Manning and Matt Benning, slow. I mean, they're probably right at the bottom. And same with Cave and Brodziak for their positions. Jujhar Khaira, maybe it was a little bit harsh putting him on that list, and Adam Larson, because maybe you could classify them as kind of somewhat average, but I just have them both a little bit below Larson's straight ahead speed. He's a fairly agile player, at least when his back's not hurting. But and Khaira, I mean, he's an okay skater. He's certainly not fast. He's not agile. So I'm going to say both of them are just a little bit below average. And then those other 6 are way below average. I'm guessing you can maybe have, so there's 8 guys in that category. Let's be generous, say it's just 6. But I think you can't have more than 2 or 3 on your team. If you're going to win in the NHL, you can't have more than 2 or 3 guys. If you're going to be a winning team, 2 or 3 guys that are considerably below average skaters, maybe you can get away with that. But six, it's not going to happen for your team. And I've been calling all year for some kind of rookie line from the AHL to come up. I mean, Caleb Jones has looked good. Ethan Bear isn't a great skater. I don't know if there's an answer within the Oilers system right now, within the players that they have. But I do know that you can't have that many weak skaters on your team and hope to compete night in, night out. I mean, Klefbom's coming back. That's a little bit of good news because he's definitely a strong skater at the NHL level. All right. My number is four. And that's the number of goals against where Adam Larson made a major mistake. And Bruce McCurdy was saying that there's some talk that his back might be hurting or he's had a bad back and that can slow him down. He's just in the midst of a wicked defensive slump right now, Larson is. And it's absolutely hammering the team. So on the second goal against, that was probably his least of the four mistakes that he made. That was probably the least worst. Both he and Nurse were absolutely blotting out the sun and screening Cam Talbot on that play to the point where even though it's a point shot, I didn't see Cam Talbot having any chance, realistic chance of making that save. They just, Nurse and Larson were just completely, there's no chance he had of seeing that puck. On the third goal against, the one that justifiably had Cam Talbot pulled from the game. And I'll end up on a note on Cam Talbot, maybe, and then I'll maybe try to think of something positive to say at the end. But Larson was beat down the ice, and I think it was Niederreiter, and just beat down the ice. And then the puck goes into the corner. He can't score from the corner. The only way he's going to score is if he beats you out of the corner. But Larson went in there really aggressively. He tends to be over-aggressive right now. I think he's pushing too hard, and he's becoming a little making mistakes because he's trying to do too much. And he got whipped around. Niedermeyer kind of hooked him, and he got on the wrong side of him, and Niederreiter comes out and slams it past Talbot. I mean, Talbot should have had that one, obviously, but Larson lets him out of the corner, and that's another major mistake. All right, on the that was on the third goal. On the fourth goal, that was the real backbreaker for the Oilers because it was 3-1, and there's still a chance that, you know, I don't know how many times the Oilers come back from a 3-1 deficit and win a game in a year, maybe four or five times in recent years. It's not often, but it is possible. And you know, the Winnipeg game from earlier this year probably all sticks out in our memory as the happiest moment of the season. And one time when they did come back from a terrible deficit and won the game. Anyway, that 4-1 goal early in the second period. What do I have? Oh, he allowed, again, the puck's in the corner. He's got to get stick on puck. He can't allow a slot pass. He allows a slot pass. And it goes to McGinn, and McGinn hammers it, and it goes, it deflects off Colby Cave's stick into the net. And that's all she wrote, you know, realistically for the Edmonton Oilers in that game. The worst of the six mistakes, well, maybe the third goal against, but the sixth goal against was another bad one. They're rushing up the ice. McDavid loses the faceoff and then loses a battle at the blue line. And so it's a 3-on-2. And McDavid's never quite back in the play. But Larson loses his man, Martin, completely. And he goes in for a tip goal. And I think it was Louis DeBrusque, one of the announcers, accused Larson of puck watching on the play. That's a fair comment. He wasn't watching his man, wasn't taking his man. We've seen runs of play where Adam Larson has been a very good player for the Edmonton Oilers. This is not one of them. He is really struggling, and he's been asked to play in the number one role. He can't do it. He's not that player. He doesn't move the puck well enough. And he's starting to get discombobulated on defense as well. He needs Klefbom back, and the sooner that happens, obviously, the better. So, Cam Talbot. The other day on Oilers Now, I'm going to just call up the story that Ryan Burke was on, and he kind of dropped the bomb that I don't think Bob Stauffer was expecting, because they were talking about Cam Talbot's trade value. And, you know, usually in Oilers country, when people talk about trading Cam Talbot, they talk about, you know, he's going to be in some kind of trade for maybe Simmons from Philadelphia or some good player, and he's going to be one of the pieces that's moved. And Burke just out and out said it. He told it like it was. And you can think what you want about Brian Burke, but he knows the value of NHL players from his time, long time in NHL management. He knows how managers think. So I take him representative of that, of the NHL consensus, of the NHL mindset, of how general managers think. And his comment was to Stauffer, I don't think you can move him. And Stauffer misunderstood him in the moment. He you know, he's asking about the trade value of Talbot. And again, Burke says, I don't think you can move him. Stauffer says, next, so you got to ride him out, thinking like he's, well, maybe he's too valuable to be moved, that the Oilers need two good goalies. And so you got to keep Cam Talbot around because you need these two good goalies in a playoff race. But Burke's having none of that. And he says, I don't think you can move him at that salary. I just don't think he's movable. But I don't think anyone is going to take a UFA that is making that kind of money and hope he gets his game straightened out for the last month of the year. And as soon as Burke said that, I just thought, oh yeah, truth bomb. Like, that is the unhappy, unwelcome truth for Edmonton Oilers fans with Cam Talbot right now. And we shouldn't be surprised, because how long have we been watching this same replay where he's letting in early goals in a game and some of them aren't the best goals? Like, the first shot was a tough shot, but he was also deep in his crease on the Hurricanes' first goal. He wasn't at the top of his crease. He wasn't challenging the shooter. If he had been, he probably makes that save. You know, the third goal is just terrible. So, I mean, and you look at Talbot's save percentage, and you compare it to other starting goalies, like the 30 guys in the last couple of years that have started, you know, more than half the games for their teams. And he's right near the bottom, right at the bottom, like 27th out of 29th or in that category for save percentage. So, if, you know, at more than $4 million a year, Burke is bang on. So that's the bad news. I guess that was two bad things. So I'm going to give another good thing after all. I'm continuing, like, I know, I get it. I'm a Jesse Puljujärvi fan, and I'm looking for the good things, but I'm starting to see them. I'm starting to see a player with increasing confidence with the puck who's apparently just made up his mind, like, the hell with it, I'm just going to make plays. And, you know, John Shannon gave him heck for not hitting McDavid with the pass, and how inexcusable is that? And to his credit, Drew Remenda said, come on. Like, you're just throwing him out there with McDavid. He hasn't played with him in how long, and the lines are constantly shifting, and you expect him to connect with him and to know his idiosyncrasies on the ice and make the right play all the time. You know, I really don't believe, actually, that Puljujärvi and McDavid are a very good combination in the end. Puljujärvi is really strong with the puck. And the right play is to give him a line where he's counted on as a primary or the primary puck carrier. And we're starting to see signs that he's ready for that, I think, in the last two games. He's really moving well on the ice with the puck, and he's gotten some points. And he should be on the power play. Like, there's this long list of unwritten rules in the Edmonton Oilers, things you can't do. And high on that list is you can't have Jesse Puljujärvi on the left half wall in the power play for some reason, because that's, you know, he is at his best there. He can move the puck, he can pass it, he can shoot a one-timer with his right shot, and he's never there. He's hardly ever there. I don't get it. It's a big mistake. And if you want to give this player some confidence and some power play points, put him there, at least on the second unit. Probably on the first unit at this point. I don't like him with McDavid. McDavid commands the puck, and, I mean, it was suggested, I think, again, it was by Shannon last year, that Puljujärvi is scared of playing with Dreisaitl and McDavid. There might be some truth to that. I don't know. Clearly, Dreisaitl and McDavid, they seem to want to play together. Dreisaitl always plays terribly, as he did at the start of the game when he's taken off McDavid's line. So put those two together, whatever. Nugent Hopkins moves the puck well. He thinks the game well. He can combine well with Puljujärvi. Kara can. I don't know why that line was pulled apart. They were a decent line for the short period of time, 3 or 4 or 5 games they were together. They were starting to show some chemistry. Put those guys together again. End this experimentation, end this going back to Milan Lucic. How many times do we have to see him not succeed? I know he's been scoring some goals, but so some pucks have been finding the net. The puck luck has come his way, but it is puck luck. I mean, it's not like these have been brilliant chances necessarily. There have been a couple outside shots and a tip or two. So go with Puljujärvi, Kara, and Nugent Hopkins on a line. See if that works. And, again, I would come back to Ty Ratty. I'm hoping to see him. I don't mind Chiasson as a player. He's obviously got a nose for the net, but he's not strong defensively, and he's slow as molasses out there. And put Ratty with McDavid and Draisaitl, Puljujärvi, Kyra, Nugent Hopkins on your second line, and find the fastest guys you can find in the rest in the organization to put them on your second and third and fourth lines. Just bench all the slow guys. Make sense? I'm just tired of seeing them. I guess you could have a couple. Probably every team has a couple. Obviously, if the skill is like average skill or below average, like, you know, if you're technical about it, you know, half the players, you know, half the players are in that category of below the median line of average NHL skater. But a winning team is not going to have as many of those as losing teams. And the Oilers, again, had at least 8 players below that line, and a lot of them in the very, very bottom percentiles. So fast skaters on the bottom lines, fast skaters and guys who can move the puck. Can they bring that Pearson guy over from Sweden? There's a thought. Anyway, let's leave it there. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Bruce, I hope you saw one heck of a moon. I went out there to look at it myself with my kids, and it was all clouded over. And, you could see the moon through it a little bit, and there was some red stuff on it. So that was kind of cool. But I was hoping for something a bit more spectacular, I admit. Alrighty, that's it for today. And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.